Hey everyone, welcome back to the On the Brink podcast. I am here with my good friend from college, Tommy Bravos. He is currently a musician and does a whole lot of other things in the arts in Chicago. And I'm really, really excited to have him on as the season finale of my podcast for season two. So welcome to the podcast, Tommy.
Hello, Miss Brink. Thank you for having me as a guest on The Brink. I'm very honored to be here.
Oh my gosh, you have to share the origins of the Miss Brink thing.
Well, as Emily mentioned, we are good friends from college. I don't think we really started talking until about sophomore year. Yeah.
Probably.
Everyone's kind of like in their own little bubble freshman year. And then you kind of branch out when you're accustomed to the environment and you know more about the people. But I don't really remember where, like, Miss Brink entirely came from. I think you had started teaching privately to, like, people from the Bloomington community. And whenever I would run into you in the pit, you had just been finishing up a lesson. So I'd just be like, oh, hey, Miss Brink, you know.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think also people in Delta Omicron, they were calling me, like, Madam President. And so
that's right.
Mm-hmm. I think then it somehow evolved to, like, Madam President, Ms. Brink.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of a little bit of all that. But, oh my gosh, such good times. We had such fun times in college. I think we really became closer friends, like, towards the end, like, junior, senior year.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, like, have fond memories of, like, going over to your house.
Yeah, because we both worked in the lab for a little bit, I remember.
Right. Yeah, mm-hmm. We did. We worked in the music lab together. And then when you moved in and you were living with John, and I would go over and hang out at your house, it was always a good time. Always a good time. Mm-hmm. Very fond memories of hanging out with you at Wesleyan.
Our alma mater.
Yes.
I don't even remember how the song goes that we're supposed to sing. True to our alma mater, Wesleyan, or something like that.
I don't know. It's been so long, but mm-hmm. It's been, gosh, I think, how many years since we graduated? Like 3 years since we graduated.
It'll be four this May. So this is we're officially out of college for as long as we were in college.
Oh, gosh. Not
this
quite.
Coming spring.
Almost. Yeah, almost. Yeah, it's wild, but I definitely want to chat with you a little bit about your path after mm-hmm. college, and, you know, share with my listeners a little bit about what you studied in college and then how you ended up where you are right now, which mm-hmm. is, I know, a lot to talk about.
No, that's okay. So I actually started school as a composition major. Once I had really landed on the idea of going into school to study music, I knew that the right path for being a music major was in writing. You know, coming out of high school, I had scored transition music for musicals. I had written at least two musicals with a group of friends for summer, student-directed one-acts. I had over two albums worth of songs that I had written with another friend who wrote lyrics and I wrote the music to them. So just having all that under my belt, you know, I knew that writing was something I had to follow. So the first 2 years, you know, it was just strict composition major, and that was sort of an adjustment going from, you know, writing mostly pop music to a program in which I was fully immersed in classical music and learning about my capabilities, you know, composing for choral works, for chamber works, you know, taking a more classical approach to my pop writing and really thinking about, you know, what sort of meter am I writing in, what feel do I want, you know, what chord changes can I throw in here to make it a little more spicy compared to average pop. But after our sophomore year, the program at Wesleyan had gotten so diverse in terms of what people were presenting at recitals, composition recitals, that the school created a new major that kind of encapsulated that ever-changing feel of contemporary music. So the major was called Contemporary Musicianship, and it had coursework in music technology, a little bit of music business. It was basically designed for, you know, modern musicians who were classically trained but wanted to, you know, divide away from the path a little bit and use that classical knowledge in jazz, in pop, anything out of sort of the classical mainstream. So that's how my coursework changed over school. And I think that sort of captured my changing artist as an or changing nature as an artist as well. And it kind of helped me really get a clear idea of like what I wanted to record and, you know, how I wanted to grow as a person. So that was sort of the beginning at school, if that sort of sums everything up for you.
Yeah, for sure. So I just want to say, and I totally like messed up my intro of you, because I wanted to say, first of all, that my intro and outro music is yours. You wrote that music. So anyone who's listening right now and who, you know, often listens to my podcast, you've heard Tommy's music already. And just in, like, the instrumental, not even in his, you know, like, this is just the instrumental version of some of his songs and a very, very small portion of it at that. So you, if you're listening to this, you've heard his music, but I definitely recommend that you go look him up on Spotify, which we will talk about later. But I also want to say that you, from the time I met you up on, like, till now, obviously, you are one of, like, the most hardworking, driven people that I know. Like, you are such a go-getter when it comes to music, especially, and, like, just making things work and making things happen.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And, like, your music is so, like, I have known you for long enough that I can hear the style in your music change. I can hear your growth as, like, a person and a musician and, like, the confidence that you have. I have gone to your performances before. I've seen you play in Chicago, and I'm always just blown away by what you're doing. So I just want to say, you know, put that out there, that I am a big fan of yours, and I'm just so proud of, like, how far you've come. And now I want to talk a little bit about, like, what you're currently doing, and since college, what you've been doing in the music world, and then, like, in the arts administration field as well.
Well, thank you very much for those very kind and flattering words. As a fellow performer, I'm sure you are aware of the inner conversation and the anxiety we get when it's like, is this even worth it? Can people even tell that I'm doing all this work? And it really does mean a lot to hear, you know, some of the observations that I have in my head actualized by someone else who's, you know, an outside observer. And someone who has moved, since we've met, has moved across the country. So for those observations to be made virtually, in addition to, you know, having seen me perform before, it really means a lot. So thank you. It's hard, you know. It's a constant battle to be, like, thinking about the work and if you can show that you're actually growing. And it means a lot to hear that. You know, someone is seeing that the work I'm doing into myself as well, into my art, and how that confidence in my own identity has translated into what I create.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, every single word.
Well, thank you. I know you had mentioned wanting to talk about, you know, what it's like being a gay artist. And I think that this is actually a really good time to talk about that correlation in my identity as a, you know, as an out man and as an artist as well. So the environment in which our society exists in terms of sexuality and expression is incredibly different right now than it was when we were in school. You know, so I didn't even come out before college. My freshman year was when I had really started to just vocally accept that I was gay. And I think that that sort of, not to say that I, like, wasn't fully myself, but I was just starting to come into myself. And so I didn't really know how to express my taste in music and how I like to look and dance when I'm expressing myself to music. That was all very new to me. So I think in my first project that I had released, of which the music that Emily featured on The Brink is from, is really, really early in just my accepting of being a queer person, being in a community that isn't really highlighted by major industries or even really the education that we received. I think one thing I had really just wanted to embrace on my first album was just being vocal about singing about my feelings for men. So, you know, while the music itself, it was fairly simple, not to say that I didn't put effort into writing it, but it was just very on the surface of what, you know, I feel now on the inside. It was my first experimentation with vocally singing about wanting to dance with a man, being upset over men. And it was also the first project that I really wrote my own lyrics for, which is also special to me. But in releasing that project and knowing how it was received, and of course, you know, I graduated after recording all of it, so I released this album right after I moved to Chicago. So I was full ankles deep in, you know, a new nightlife scene and being around drag performers and, you know, people who existed outside of the gender binary, none of which I really knew in college, and seeing this whole new world of expression and how that helped me come into closer contact with my inner self, I guess we can put it. So once I moved and really had that outlet to express myself and learn more about how I want to express myself, I think that started to drastically change the music that I was making. And you can hear the difference in this first single that I put out after my album. It's completely synth pop. It's totally different. And then following that with my latest release, Charming, you know, there's just a very, very clear idea of who I am and how I express that musically. And I feel like I didn't have that clarity with my first major releases. So it really has been a journey. I feel like I'm sort of ranting right now, but I look back at, you know, what I was writing in college and even who I was in college. And it's refreshing, honestly, to say, you know, I don't know who that person is anymore. I've grown so much. And in a good way, I don't know who that person is, because that person was the foundation for who I am now. So it has been a wild, wild step-by-step process in learning more about myself and how this journey has influenced my music.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love Charming, by the way. I mean, I used it for the outro, but like I like dance along to it. I really, really love that single.
Thank you so much. I mean, that's what I wanted it to be, you know, moving and going from living in Bloomington and the suburbs, where there's quite literally no outlet to safely dance for queer people, and, you know, in a way, women as well, you know, without being hypersexualized and preyed upon by men trying to take you home.
True.
So going from that environment to moving to Chicago, when I had a whole strip of gay bars at my disposal, I really, really wanted something that I would feel comfortable dancing to and that other people would feel comfortable dancing to in a way that isn't inherently sexual. When I was in the studio working on Charming, I had just started getting super into disco. I grew up on ABBA, but I, you know, in a way, in being in the closet and then having to rediscover myself after coming out, you know, it's been a process of realizing how much camp and glamour I grew up with. So I started listening to ABBA again. I got very, very into Donna Summer in the fall when I was recording Charming. So I definitely wanted to have a major disco influence while I was recording that. And that's actually carried over into my next project, which I'm working on now.
Ooh, okay. So talk to me a little bit about what you're currently working on. And also, like, tell me about these music videos that you've been making, because they're so fun and I love them.
Well, we also wanted to talk a little bit about quarantine lifestyle, and this all kind of plays together. So when quarantine started in March, it was literally like right after I put out Charming, like I released Charming on Friday, March 13th, and then the country went into lockdown the following week. So it was a little disappointing because I was ready for people to be dancing this, playing it at pregames, you know, reaching out to DJs and trying to have it played in clubs, and then everything just stopped. So at first, you know, it was really tough to try to stay creative. And of course, you know, as most artists do, I have a day job. So I was blessed enough to be working from home for a bulk of quarantine before I was furloughed in the summer. But to go from, you know, my living room working to my piano, you know, a few steps away, it was very disheartening to even try to be creative. And, you know, everyone had this mentality like, you know, we're in a pandemic. There's no need to be forcing yourself to make anything for the sake of making things. So for a bit, I wasn't writing. And then over time, writing naturally came to me. And before I knew it, I had a whole, you know, second album's worth of songs ready to go. And I live with my younger sibling, and they're a teacher. So they've, you know, had steady work through all this. And we've just slowly been accumulating the means to have a home studio. So, you know, we're ready to go. We've been laying tracks almost every day. But not having live shows has still, you know, it's hurt. Not even just financially, but for my soul, you know, to not even be able to share with what I'm working on in the same room as people. It's disheartening. And so that's sort of translated both in the music community. You see it a lot with drag artists, with these online streams in which, you know, there's a chat room and everyone is watching together and you can, you know, react in real time as well as the internet allows you, to sort of substitute that feeling until it is fully safe to be back, you know, shows in person. But one thing I've sort of wrestled with in general outside of this pandemic is like feeling included in the music community. You know, it's still very, very dominated by cishet men. And, you know, I kind of have to reserve myself, or had to be booked for shows. You know, moving to Chicago, it was very difficult to even get noticed on, you know, the bigger scene of, you know, independent and DIY musicians. And I didn't really start getting the ball rolling until I had played a show that was more of like a talent show highlighting queer artists. You know, we performed, I think the first one was last March of 2019, and there was burlesque, there was drag performers, queer rappers, hip-hop artists, dancers. And so that was like the first time that I like felt like I was on a bill that I wanted to be featured in. You know, I was around people that felt like my community. And that also kind of goes hand in hand with, you know, my journey as a queer person. So I've always felt a little bit more at home doing shows in correlation with drag artists and more visibly queer people. And I haven't really seen a lot of that in the general music community, and that's not a jab, that's just my own feeling. So these past few videos that you mentioned have actually been featured in drag show streams on Twitch. So the first one I did was a morning drag show, and of course they wanted, you know, if you're aware of the meme, the Christian girl autumn memes, just kind of live, laugh, love, lighthearted humor, mid-2000s, you know, feel-good music. So the song I did was, I covered New Soul by Yael Naim, who, if you aren't aware, that song was on almost every Apple commercial in like 2009, 2010. Oh, yeah. And it's been really fun, you know, to bring my sense of humor into my art as well, because that's always been a big part of me. Is, you know, I like to joke around. I like to sort of make a fool of myself at, you know, my own pleasure. I enjoy making people laugh. So it's been really fun to have this outlet that speaks to who I am without, like, trying too hard. I feel like with other music videos I've made, and just how I've, you know, continued to learn how I express myself, it's really easy to like nail it to the ground and just be like, this is my vibe, this is who I am, and that's not really authentic if you're just trying to look a certain way. So it's been really, really fun to have this new outlet that speaks more to me in a community that speaks more to me. I actually have another show. I don't think this episode will air before then, but I did a video my first time performing in drag as well. I covered a Kate Bush song, produced it myself at home, and then recorded a video to it, half in drag, half out of drag, for a show highlighting albums that have been rated 7.7 by Pitchfork. So it's been very challenging in a great way to kind of bridge all my artistic outlets together and figure out how I can really make it speak to an audience and really encapsulate me.
That's awesome. I didn't know that you did that, so that's really cool.
Yeah.
I gotta check this out.
Yeah, it's this Thursday, October 15th at 7 p.m. And I believe this episode will air after that, I will have the video up on my social media channel. So if you want to follow me on Instagram and Twitter, it's just Tommy Bravos on both platforms and on Spotify as well.
Perfect. Okay, good. We were definitely going to plug all your social media so that people can find you, because I want people to go and listen to your music and watch your videos and see what we're talking about, because it's really cool. So how do you stand out in a time that's so saturated with artists with nowhere to go and nothing to do? I mean, mm-hmm. How do you stand out and how do you stay busy too?
Well, this has been a very anxiety-inducing time, and this topic as well. I think when quarantine first started, I was like in an absolute frenzy. I was like, well, everyone's at home, everyone's on their phone. What am I doing to gain attention? I got on TikTok and I was just driving myself crazy trying to come up with content that would gain attention. And I really got lost in that. And it just didn't make me feel good. It didn't make me feel like I was expressing myself in an authentic way. And so I just sort of stopped, honestly. I had a dumb tweet go viral. It's just a Pokemon joke in June. And I remember after that happened, I was like, okay, I have to follow this up. I had all these people follow me because I made a funny joke. And then I just noticed, like, the more that I was, like, trying to come up with things to cater towards an algorithm or content that would gain me follows, it just didn't make me happy at all. And then I wasn't happy with myself, and that turned into, well, I'm a fake person. I'm not, you know, I'm focusing on the wrong thing. I should be focusing on my music. And that's not to say that, you know, how people perceive us and how we want to be perceived isn't a valid feeling. But for me personally, I just didn't like the way I was experiencing that emotion. I got really depressed. I started my anxiety medicine again. And I've taken up to journaling. It's really helped me, you know, let go of my own attachment to that idea of standing out and gaining traction. And then, you know, since I accepted that, I found that I'm actually gaining more followers by just authentically being myself. And, you know, it's so easy in our current society to be obsessed with, you know, especially as an artist, like expanding your audience and, you know, making money as an artist. But I'm really, really settling into the fact that for me, it's how I feel, and it's not the amount of people I'm impacting, it's just the impact I'm having. And, you know, I'm making myself laugh, I'm making my friends laugh, and I'm making the audience I do have laugh, and they're enjoying my music, and from what I've teased of what's coming, they're enjoying that as well. So that's really all I can ask for. And the standing out comes when you fully embrace who you are instead of trying to be someone you think that society wants to see.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that. I think there's a lot of truth in that. Like, when you finally just kind of put that aside and you're not worried about, like, how many followers do I have? Or, you know, am I saying the right things? It's like, no, like, say what you want to say. Like, do what you want to do. Do what makes you happy. I think that's so, so important, especially in our 20s, which is what my podcast is all about. And I can relate, like, as someone that started a podcast, like, I'm not doing this because I have, you know, X amount of followers. Like, at first I was caring a lot about the statistics. I was like, oh, it's cool, because it's cool to see that you have people following you, you know, but you can't be upset if, like, an episode doesn't do as well, or, you know, if, let's say, one of your songs doesn't have as many, you know, listens or downloads or whatever it might be. It's like, if you're happy and you're happy with what you put out there, like, you have to kind of be content in that.
Absolutely. And then the support comes when people see that you are doing it for yourself instead of doing it to please an algorithm.
Or you're being authentic.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I know exactly what you mean, though. Like, I'll post a promo tweet for, you know, a show I'm doing, or like, oh, you know, this is what I'm working on, and it doesn't do well, and it's like, oh shit, you know, why am I even trying if I'm not gaining attention from this? And it's like, okay, but I'm doing it because it makes me happy, you know? Like, no one really asked for a house-inspired dance cover of a Kate Bush song from the 80s, but I made it because it makes me happy, and it, you know, speaks to my interests now, and an artist that I'm really inspired by who didn't make music that exists like the music I'm creating now. And that's intrinsically what art and what creating are about, because you make things because you want to and because it speaks to your soul, you know. No one makes a songbird sing a certain way. It just does it because that's what it wants to do. And that's okay.
So do you think that you're taking more risks now because of this? Like, do you think it's freed you up to take more risks?
Absolutely. You know, I sort of touched on this earlier with the, like, going back to who I was before I closeted myself away. When I started writing music, you know, it was because of Florence and the Machine. Florence Welch was, you know, my first idol that I really discovered on my own, that I didn't grow up with or have someone tell me to listen to, like the Beatles or ABBA were from my parents. And I, like, you know, I had always envisioned of myself being as sort of like a male version of her, you know, like this weird sort of witchy person in touch with nature, just like really out there and bizarre. And then I like got so caught up with how I was being perceived, and especially in the gay community, how I'm perceived as a gay man, especially one who's more in touch with his emotional side and, like, you know, just wants love and affection, you know, out of, you know, my friends and partners. So I kind of just got, like, really closed off to that aspect of myself. And it's sort of funny that, like, in discovering my love for Kate Bush at the end of last summer, who ironically is one of Florence and the Machine's biggest inspirations, that I've kind of, like, tapped back into that more mystical, kind of witchy, more earth-driven vibe. And, like, not to say that that's a risk, but it's definitely, like, not what you see in people making pop music today. You know, I'm in a lot of group chats. I've gotten connected to a lot of DIY pop artists online as I, you know, continue to grow on Twitter and change the way I use it more as, like, a network instead of, you know, just tweeting dumb thoughts out there. It's definitely a risk, but, you know, it's a niche, and I always see people say, be the artist that you wish you had and that you see a gap in. And, you know, all these mystical women that have existed in the music industry, I mean, Stevie Nicks, Kate Bush, Florence Welch, Bjork, Bat for Lashes, I could go on and on, but you don't really have a male, or, you know, not female version of that artist. And I can't carve out that hole unless I try to do it. So that's been really exciting, and it's definitely visible on this next project. I guess I can talk a little bit about it. I won't release the album title, but it's definitely more mystical. I play a lot with Greek mythology, you know, having learned about it growing up as a 100% Greek man. using Greek gods and figures from Greek dramas and tragedies as metaphors for my own current experience. And that's totally something that I would be scared to write about in college when I first started releasing my own music. So it's cool that I've seen these risk takings kind of give me more confidence as well.
I'm so excited for this new music. I'm so excited.
Yeah, I guess I can talk about the first song that will be released a little bit.
Yeah.
It uses Cassandra of Troy as a metaphor for romantic experiences. She was blessed with the ability to see the future, but then, and it was always accurate, but cursed with the fact that no one would ever believe her. So in the story of the Trojan War, she kept trying to warn the city was going to fall and, you know, be destroyed, but no one believed her. So I used that sort of as an allegory for, you know, I've seen the future that we could create together in my dreams, and I just know it exists. But if you're not going to listen to me expressing my feelings for you, then nothing's going to happen. You know, we're both going to be destroyed, which is really cool because I haven't really written in like a veiled metaphor that deep before. You know, it's Charming was kind of like the first little bit of veiling things underneath different lingo. I was very, very literal on my first album. So it's cool to play with these more mystical and authentic to, you know, my heritage, all these factors. So
yeah, I love that. I love that you use like your own experiences too. Like everything that you write about is very true to yourself. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like your personal experiences. Do you write about like specific people sometimes?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I do, and I will continue to do so. But more so like about people, I think it's specific ways that a certain person has made me feel rather than like you suck or I love you. It's more like, you know, I love the way you've made me feel. Are we going to give that up sort of thing? Or, you know, like, I could be everything you want if you just give this a chance, that sort of approach. I don't really like doing like personal disses or like referencing exact scenarios. Charming was inspired by a single person, but it was more about the feeling I had for him. You know, it was kind of like, I'm waiting for you here. Like, I want you to put your magic on me. And it was more about, you know, knowing that someone makes you feel good. You know, they like to flirt. They like to play around with your feelings, but you're sort of in love with the thrill of the game and they're not really finishing the game for you. That was a specific person, but it was a more universal feeling that people can relate to. I try to make sure that my experiences that I write about aren't so personally unique that people can't put, you know, their own life into the song, or vice versa, you know, put the song into something that they can find meaning in. I think that's really important, you know, for all music to be accessible beyond your own expression in a way, and in some way, you know, not to say you're writing for other people and not for yourself, but to be able to allow other people to see their own experiences in your craft.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you want people to relate to your music,
mm-hmm.
for sure. Yeah, I know that I can. I mean, I listen to it and I'm like, oh yeah. Granted, you know, I'm a straight female, so I can relate in a similar kind of way, mm-hmm. but not coming from your exact perspective.
Well, and that's like the beauty of it, because I'm not writing music for a specific demographic, you know, I'm writing it for me, but for someone who's not in my demographic at all, to be able to relate to it, that's beautiful. You know, that makes me incredibly happy to hear.
Yeah, no, I love it. Do you find that it's cathartic, like, to include your own personal experiences in the music that you write?
Absolutely. Particularly with, you know, severing romantic connections and friendship connections, it's very, very cathartic. And that's not to say that, you know, I write it and it's like, boom, feeling's gone. I actualized it on a page and I no longer feel this way. But it's, you know, it's a little bit of a reminder. You know, I write about something that has made me sad, and then that really helps, and I don't think about it for a while, and then I'm sad about it again, but I play what had come out of that sadness, and it makes me feel even just a little bit better, you know. I recently went through a breakup this summer, and of course wrote some lyrics out of it that will be on the album, and every time I'm a little bit down over that, you know, no longer existing romantic connection, it's nice to know that to remind myself that I enjoyed it and that I was able to create out of it, which is something to show, you know, and your happiness, because it's not physically tangible, it's nice to create something out of an experience that can remind yourself of the good that had happened.
Yeah, definitely. I think everybody needs an outlet of some sort, like, to get mm-hmm. through experiences like that, and I think an artist like you probably is through your music, through your videos, through just like expressing yourself generally. But, mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it's good to have an outlet like that to kind of feel better sometimes or feel worse sometimes and then feel better. Because it's not always like an instant, it's not going to be like an instant fix, you know?
Mm-hmm.
My next question is, what advice would you have for young musicians who are like, you know, coming up, who might be like younger than you, just starting out after college and trying to make it at this time, like right mm-hmm. now in the middle of a pandemic, especially?
Yeah, of course. I wish it was as simple as a piece of advice. I think the most applicable advice from my own experience would be to detach yourself from the concept of a path you have to follow in order to be successful. Because chasing a path that you're told will work will just lead to disappointment when it doesn't work for you, because everyone's path is different. So for me, the path that seems to be working right now is using my classical knowledge to have a church choir job that allows me to survive financially and, you know, keeps my music reading chops up to standard. And then, you know, I had a day job working in music arts administration at the Chicago Symphony. And, you know, that allowed me access to a lot of things that inspired me and influenced me and, you know, keep myself afloat while I tried, you know, to get the music career off the ground, which is now off the ground. You know, it may only be a few inches, but it's still going. And I'm happy with how it's going. And, you know, for some people, getting a day job that is a little draining isn't the path. So I think the advice I can give is to just put out feelers and see what makes you happy, see what works with your career trajectory, and follow it. It's so scary to take a reaction from your gut and just go with it. But I think it's so important for everyone to realize that your path is going to be unique to you, and your product is also going to be unique to you. What you create is not going to look like what other people make, and you should be happy with what you're making, and that's where the real success will come. So I think, you know, follow your heart and what it's telling you to do, and don't let what is expected of you to dictate how you make your choices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really good advice. I think it's so hard working any field in the arts right now. Like, mm-hmm. it's incredibly difficult, and it's very hard to not feel like a failure sometimes when, mm-hmm. in all honesty, like, right now, the pandemic is to blame for a lot of things. Like, it's not anyone's fault that we can't be working in the way that we want to be right now. Like, for a lot of artists, there is no choice. Like, you can't go and play a gig, no matter mm-hmm. how badly you want to. Like, it's just not safe, and things are not open. You just cannot. And, like, for me, I can't work mm-hmm. a gig. I can't coordinate concerts. I can't do that. I'm on the other side of it. So I completely understand. And I think right now it's hard to kind of keep that in mind sometimes and not feel like you mm-hmm. could be doing more or you should be following this, like, you know, ideal set path. So I completely understand, but I think your advice is spot on for anyone who's trying to make it work.
Yeah. And I think that sort of leads into another piece of advice. What you were saying is that we have to be adaptable, you know. Right now, our society is saying that it's too dangerous. Not society, science, really. So, you know, believe science. It's too dangerous to be playing shows in person. It's not worth the risk, in my opinion. But that sort of serves as a new challenge. You know, how else can I engage with my audience? How else can I expand who is following my artistic journey? And I think seeing that this obstacle, this medical obstacle, as an opportunity rather than as a barrier is also really helpful. Because honestly, I found that I've had more success expanding my audience from home than I have being able to go play shows, like convincing my friends to pay $10 to go to a bar where there's three bands and maybe 20 people in the audience total. It's, you know, that was more draining for me than sitting at home and thinking of ways I can film a video and, you know, come up with visual or musical content that is going to speak to someone. So don't get yourself down. Of course, being down is valid. And if you are down, stay down as long as you need. But it's definitely helpful to springboard this into seeing what you can do with the resources you have. I mean, if you have any sort of smartphone, that's an amazing start right there to reaching people. You know, there's always something we can do. I mean, you are doing it yourself. You know, you started this podcast right when the quarantine hit. So you're still connecting with the people in your life and you're talking about your experience as an artist and, you know, you're challenging yourself in a new artistic way. And at the end of the day, isn't that what being an artist is about, is, you know, pushing yourself to new creative outlets?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think this is such a, I don't want to say make or break time mm-hmm. because it's like all over the place, but it's a time for innovation and trying new things. And mm-hmm. if that is something you feel inclined to do, like, now is the time to try, because, you know, we're all stuck at home in a sense still, even if you're mm-hmm. going back to work a little bit, like, we're not to the point that we were a year ago. And so I think, yeah, now is the time to go and try and, you know, do it, you know, just go and try. Mm-hmm. And I love everything that you're doing and staying relevant in the Chicago music scene, even when it's not happening in person. It's all, like, pretty much virtual at this point, but you're really, mm-hmm. really making it work. So that's super inspiring to me and probably to a lot of my listeners as well, once they hear your story.
Well, I'm honored to be seen as an inspiration. And again, I thank you for your absolutely kind words that mean a lot coming from a close friend.
Of course. Yeah. So I just want to say thank you again for joining me as a podcast guest. This was so great. And this is the last episode of season 2, like I said. So I also want to thank all of my listeners who have stuck with me to this point. It does really, really mean a lot that people have stuck with me through 24 episodes and are still listening. I really appreciate it. And I will continue to do some merch giveaways and, you know, continue to engage on social media, even when I'm on my little hiatus, because I'm going to take a little bit of a break before season 3. So thank you all for listening. And thank you again, Tommy, for joining me for this last episode.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for having me. Again, it was a pleasure and an honor, honestly.
Oh, well, thanks. So I will see all of you guys probably in 2021 or late 2020, and stay tuned for season 3. Thank you, everybody.